morning, horror fans, monster lovers, weirdos. This is Bigfoot and Bob. I'm your host, Layla, a.k.a. Bigfoot.
And I'm Ryan Brown, a.k.a. Bob.
So this is all about monsters, cryptids, horror, spooky shit.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to swear? Just checking.
Yeah, there are no rules. It's a podcast.
Thank fucking God. Today we're going to start off by looking into something super up-to-date and trendy to show that we're with it. And in fact, we're with it.
Nice. That's good. Yeah.
We're going to be talking about Stephen King's It, which was always one of my favorite Stephen King books. And I actually didn't see the Tim Curry version until my senior year of high school. And then recently we watched the new one in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
So now that we can compare all three, we are going to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't really have a good comparison point for the book because I did read it for the first time when I was like 12, and I think I've read it about 58 times since then, so it's lost a bit of the shine off the old apple. Oh, I wrote down some thoughts I had about it when we were seeing it in theaters. First of all, not a huge fan of setting it in the 80s instead of back in the 50s, which I can see why they did it, but I really like that timeless feel they gave it. And if they were going to set it in the 80s, they could have made it a lot more 80s instead of that one weird New Kids on the Block reference.
Yeah, I mean, it's being billed as very Stranger Things-like, and I think in a lot of ways it was.
Yeah, they're very similar, which is fine. I like both mm-hmm. Stranger Things and It.
But I think Stranger Things goes a really long way toward, you know, really hitting that 80s nostalgia.
And I would have preferred Stranger Things to stay set in the 50s. Mm-hmm. But that's just me. The New Kids on the Block thing was jarring, and I didn't like it. I do think, and this goes for any film portrayal of it, it has a lot of characters. It has a lot of main characters. It has a lot of plot to get through.
Mm-hmm.
It has two full-length adventures put together. I mean, and it has, what, 7 main characters in addition mm-hmm. to all the supporting cast, like the bullies, the husbands and wives, the teachers, everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot to establish. And I think it would actually, speaking of Stranger Things, it would have worked really well for me as a TV series or miniseries.
Right. Well, the Tim Curry one was a 2-part TV movie.
Yeah, and that was all right. That worked pretty well for me. But I think if they really dug into the universe, there's a lot I'd like to see. And mm-hmm. there's a lot that, actually, the new It movie gave us a couple Easter eggs that they couldn't fit in the movie, I'm pretty sure. That big plastic Paul Bunyan statue that in the book comes to life and attacks people.
Oh, geez.
They had a shot of that in the park, and so the whole rest of the movie I was waiting for it to start moving around and swinging that axe.
Well, yeah, I think that might have come off a little bit campy.
And it
film.
Is. But it was nice seeing that recognition. Like, we couldn't find the time for this, but here's a little Easter egg for you.
Yeah, so if the sequel to the 2017 It runs around the same time, that'll be like 4.5 hours to tell the story.
Jeez.
Between the two of them. It's a lot of story to fit in, so it makes sense that they broke it up that way. The TV movie with Tim Curry, I think, clocked in at about 3 hours,
mm-hmm.
maybe just over 3 hours for both of the parts, and they still had to cut a lot out.
There, another thing about the cast, I think that if you're gonna try and boil it down to one or two movies, a choice that I would have personally made, and I know this is not gonna be a popular thing to say, but cut some of the child characters from the main cast.
Ooh, I kind of disagree.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I just think that because they already took Stan and cut away a lot of his character that I like so much, yeah, he does have a pretty big impact on the second one just by dint of him, spoiler alert, killing himself right at the beginning. And, you know, you need Bev because she's the only girl, and you need Mike because he's the only black kid, and I don't want to get rid of either of them, but I think combine some of them, just for time's sake.
I think that each kid has a good story. I think Stephen King did a good job of making sure that none of them felt like waste. And I didn't feel that way.
But if you're going to make a movie out of it, that's a lot of characters and a lot of stories to tell.
Yeah, that's true.
And
but
you do want to focus in on that clown eating people.
That's true. That's true. I do think that breaking it into two full-length movies, and nowadays 2 hours and 15 minutes, that's a long movie.
Mm-hmm.
For a blockbuster.
I do think that the horror was one of the stronger points for the new It movie. I know a lot of people have talked about the special effects. A lot of people aren't huge fans of it. I do think it had a lot of really good, scary parts in it. But I'm a lot more easily scared by a movie than I am by a book. So maybe not the most informed opinion. But the part with the ironworks, explosion, the kid in the library, that I liked that a lot. And at the floating imagery at the end was completely new to the 2017 movie, and I liked that a lot. That was some good visuals right there. And they made the clown a lot scarier.
That's for sure.
Pennywise, pound foolish. Do you think that's where his name comes from, that old saying?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Because the clown's name is Bob White, the dancing clown, but he calls himself Pennywise as his clown name. And there's an old British saying, Pennywise and pound foolish, about being smart with your money. There's so much good stuff in all the different It iterations. I'm not really sure. If I had to pick a favorite, obviously I would pick the book, because it has the most stuff in it. Except for that freaky child sex scene, which we're going to just gloss right over.
It was
a regrettable choice, I think.
I get where he was going with it in the book. It's horror, right? Like,
it's a very scary thing and a very disturbing and unsettling sensation that it gives you.
Right. He does a lot of, Stephen King tries to make use, I think, of horrifying things that we don't classically think of as horror.
And then mixing it in with what we do classically think of as horror to make everything just a little more disturbing.
Right, right. You know, with the gay bashing and the really horrific bullying.
Yeah.
And obviously the child orgy. Just sort of gives you this feeling that, you know, the world that this is happening in is
just a little wrong.
Just like a little more horrifying.
And what I love so much about the book is that Derry is the monster just as much as the clown is. Because the clown landed there in prehistoric times because it is an alien, giant alien spider that lays a shit ton of eggs that comes from outer space. And the town sprang up around it, its nest, where it was stuck, I think. And the town is constantly given a character. It's given these vibes, you know. This town is wrong. This town is, something's off about this town. The rate of child disappearances in this town is really, really high.
I love that when they're like, this town has the highest rate of, and it's like, then leave. Why do you live there? Stop living there.
You know, the economy.
Yeah, in this economy.
Just have more kids. Just have a couple spares.
Yeah, a couple spares around.
This is my clown child.
This is the one that we send to chase boats in the rain.
This is the one that we let go around at night and play in the barrens. We don't look after that one so much. This one's Georgie. Fuck. Ooh, that's dark.
That's pretty dark.
Maybe I'm the next Stephen King.
Oh, I think you are.
And there are so many good jokes to make about the title itself, because Stephen King really got in there first and called it It.
Yeah, that's clever.
And I think if you wanted to capitalize on that, my next horror movie, for instance, two.
Oh.
Four. And of course the sequel to It, It Follows.
Wait. Are you saying that It Follows is a direct sequel to It?
No, It Follows It. It Follows It Follows.
No, I know. It Follows Follows It.
It Follows Follows It.
Directly.
Yes.
Cool.
And that's my theory.
You heard it here first, folks. Come on for your fresh hot takes.
It Follows... Wait. It Follows Follows It?
It Follows Follows It.
That's going to be the title of the episode.
So wait, are you saying that the movie is a direct sequel, or are you saying that the It from It Follows Follows Pennywise from It?
just wait, how do you follow the money, man?
Follow the money. It follows the money to Ocean's 12.
Son of a bitch. It's all connected.
It's all connected.
So I think we've beaten it to death, much as those children did.
Mm-hmm.
It's battery acid, you slime. And let's move on to Ryan's new darling, something I know fuck all about, Be More Chill.
Yeah, yeah. So this is a book that I read in middle school, and I really enjoyed it at the time. I went back and looked over it more recently, and it didn't quite hold up for me, but I recently watched the musical that they made based on it. It ran in New Jersey in...
New Jersey.
Almost
in your
hometown. 2015. Almost. So the musical... Okay, so the reason that I bring up the Be More Chill musical in a horror podcast is because the musical actually strayed into some horror feelings for me.
Specifically monsters.
Yeah, yeah.
From what you tell me.
So I just thought it was really interesting. It would be really interesting to look at it through the lens of a monster movie because, you know, when we think of monsters, we very much think of biological monsters.
Sure. You know, skeletons.
Skeletons and...
pumpkins.
Pumpkins, yeah.
Zombies.
Yeah, but...
Frankensteins.
So in the musical, the musical has a very different ending from the book. They do a good job of recreating the book, but the ending is very, very different. Well, so first some background on Be More Chill. This kid is a loser, and he ends up finding and taking a pill that is called a SQIP, which is a super quantum unit Intel processor. And it's a quantum computer in the pill that basically lodges itself in your brain, and it talks to you and tells you how to be cool. And... his is,
it's really what we've been going for with technology this whole time.
The voice of Keanu Reeves. And yeah, I think it's sort of the logical conclusion of technology is teaching high school kids how to be cool. But in the book at the end, they're doing a performance of A Midsummer Night's Dream and the
play revolutionary.
This
tell me more.
Gives him some really bad advice, which is basically to stop the play and do a monologue where he confesses his love for his co-star and schoolmate and then tries to kiss her, and it's super awkward, and he gets thrown out of the play and all of this. And then the SQIP says, you know what? I think I might be defective. You should deactivate me and, you know, maybe get the new model when it comes out. But in the musical, it's very different. Even as early as the end of Act One, the SQIP starts going crazy. And...
Ooh, is this like a Mom House? That fucking Disney movie, you know, where the house talks?
I have Mom House. Smart House.
Oh,
Smart House. Yeah.
You know,
it's
kind of
like that. You know, Monster Smart Mom House. No, but it,
Smart Mom.
So, obviously, big spoiler warning for the Be More Chill musical, but this the SQIP, the first thing it does is it erases his best friend, Michael, by interfacing with his optic nerve.
Now, this
and
I really,
editing the
really
info
like...
going to his brain so that his friend, he can't see or hear him. Which is kind of crazy.
I love horror shit that fucks with your perception.
Yeah.
Like, okay, It Follows is a good, recent, well-known example of this, where the monster just, it gets right up in your brain, only you can see it. Oh, shit that only you can see is a horror genre all of its own.
Mm-hmm.
But this is nice because it's shit you can't see, but everyone else can.
Right. So Michael thinks that he's ignoring him, when, in fact... The SQIP has just decided that Michael should not be a part of his life anymore. And then it starts saying that we need everybody to fall in line. We need everybody to be on the same page. And so he decides, the SQIP decides that the only way to do this is to put a SQIP in every person on Earth.
SQIP.
And so it starts...
I can't get over that.
I know, it's bad, but... So it starts trying, it has these machinations, and it starts acting through other people who have squips and trying basically to take over the world. And
dun, dun, dun.
And at the end, they have to force it out of him. They have to forcibly deactivate it, which the vehicle for it is Mountain Dew Code Red. That
oh
deactivates
God.
It. Because regular Mountain Dew activates it. You have to take the pill with Mountain Dew.
I was starting to, like, warm up to the idea of this musical, and now I hate it. Thanks.
It's... I liked the music, and I liked the story. But really the thing that interested me was this idea of a computerized monster. A technological one that's inside your head that's, you know, it's got tones of mind control, of zombies, you know, that sort of walking hive mind, which
like
is very
minds.
Interesting. And I just thought it was a cool perspective on the genre. And like I said, it gave me some real horror vibes. So I thought it might be interesting.
It would have been a cool exploration if they had decided to bring it out as a full-on horror. I would love to see something like that explored in... something a little more classic, I guess. I'm sure there's an old horror movie out there that's almost exactly this concept, though.
Yeah, I think if you took the concept out of the classroom, if you took it out of high school, you might have something really interesting. To go back to Stephen
you
King...
You couldn't get it made, though. Pull that Mountain Dew funding.
You gotta get that Mountain Dew money. Get that Pepsi money. If I could take it back to Stephen King for a second.
You can always take it back to Stephen King.
One of the first, like, techno-horror stories that got me was Cell.
Didn't really grab me. I read it when it first came out, and it's a fun one.
It wasn't the most engaging, but I love the idea that cell phones kill people.
Now, the first technological horror story that really, really grabbed me was one that doesn't hold up anymore, but I still have a lot of nostalgia attached to it, and that was The Terminal Man by Michael Crichton. That's the one where he has epilepsy, and they put something in his brain to try and curb that, but the electrical impulses start sending him into murderous rages, which, of course, now all the theories behind that have been disproven, but back then there was this new cutting-edge technology and all these theories about it. What I appreciate now is that they're publishing the book with a warning at the beginning that's like, this is, you know, not a good portrayal of it anymore. We understand that. But the idea of, you know, just the wires in his brain alone. I love that technology becoming something horrific, but done in a way that you don't usually see, like the whole Doctor Who Cyberman shtick.
Yeah, and sort of like how if we make contact with aliens in the future and have, like, a working relationship, all of our, like, anti-alien horror movies are going to be so, like, embarrassing.
Don't get me fucking started on that whole alien visitation thing. We'll talk about that in another episode.
Yeah. I think as we learn more, we're afraid of different things.
Oh, sure.
So whenever there's a real fad in horror, it has to do with... what we're afraid of at the time.
And more recently, what we're attracted to.
Well, yeah, that too.
But I think we've played out vampires and werewolves pretty well now. And I think, you know, I think my prediction, you can write this down, you can take this to the bank. My prediction
put
is that
sealed
next
envelope.
Next we're going to want to fuck mummies. And speaking as someone who has had some unfortunate franchises associated with her home state, 50 Shades, Twilight, and... You know what? If my hometown's going to be associated with Twilight, then I'm going to take all vampires. So you know what? Washington is the official home state of not only Bigfoot, but vampires.
That sounds good.
Yeah. And put that on a t-shirt.
Put that on a t-shirt. Washington State is the home of not only Bigfoot, but vampires.
I was just thinking Washington, the vampire state.
The vampire state.
The vampire state.
I don't
want
to be the vampire state.
Well, you're not from here. I mean, you live here.
I live here. I have to... be here.
You know, back to the tiny state.
I'm the Northwest liaison to the East Coast.
The
everyone's like, "Hey, I'm going to Portland. What should I check out?" And I'm like, "I don't live there. I don't live."
Don't go to Portland. Go to Washington. Check out all the vampires.
All the vampires. They walk around
in coffins.
In coffins and stuff. Sucking blood. And...
Now, that's a sort of Bogleach-esque interpretation of a vampire that I would love to see, is just a coffin that walks around and it clamps down on you. The lid, you get in it for whatever reason.
Sorry, I was thinking about coffin.
I quit this podcast. This is bullshit.
Do you have anything else on your list?
Okay, if you don't want to talk about fun vampires anymore, I guess we can talk about Bigfoot, the other icon of Washington, not Oregon, just Washington. We can share, actually.
She has some strong feelings about this. Yeah, Bigfoot. I'm not the most knowledgeable about Bigfoot. About Bigfoot. But so why don't you give me the basics?
Well, Bigfoot is, as all cryptozoological critters are, began as a hoax, but there have been, you know, it's based on myths and rumors and bears with mange. I believe that the original name Bigfoot came from there were a couple of killer bears in the area, like huge bears that were notorious for, I don't know, eating sheep.
Killer bears, like, oh man, those bears are so cool.
Yeah, they were killer.
Killer bears, bruh.
In the 1800s.
Yeah.
And those bears were each nicknamed Bigfoot at their own respective times. And because Bigfoot is usually bears or people in suits, that became the name of this mythical hairy man. And, you know, there's a mythical hairy man in almost every culture. I'm not talking about you, Beardo.
I'm a mythical hairy man.
You're not mythical. You're just a hairy man. You do have big feet, though.
Oh, thank you.
You know, there's the Yowie in Australia, also known as the Yahoo.
I'm a big Yowie fan.
Oh, don't do this to me. There is the Yeti in the Himalayan, in Tibet.
Yep.
And there's plenty of others. I was looking at a map of Bigfoot sightings, and there's a surprising amount in Florida and around the Great Lakes, which...
Posers.
Fucking posers. Actually, I'm not surprised about it being Florida. Probably every cryptid, if you look at a map, it's like, oh, and also Florida spotted them sometimes. Like, Loch Ness Monster, oh yeah, we saw it in the Everglades, too. Funny, it was only seen in Scotland and Florida.
It's a winter home.
No, it got really old and it retired to Florida. That fucking monster is a snowbird.
I'm pretty sure it has a timeshare.
But yeah, you know, it's just the big hairy man wandering around in the woods, which sometimes is just a hairy man wandering around in the woods.
Sometimes I do that, yeah. So that actually is where we got the name for the podcast, Bigfoot and Bob.
Giving away the mystique.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, come with me behind the curtain. That is my Romanian accent. I'm sure everybody's seen the iconic image of Bigfoot, like, mid-stride, looking
he's
back.
He's like, oh. Oh, wait, audio. She. You know, he's like, oh.
She, actually. She, right. That was right. Patty, female Bigfoot.
Yeah.
That was in the Patterson-Gimlin film, which was taken in 1967, I think.
Yeah, it sounds more believable when you say it like that.
Yes, 67. Probably great audio, too.
It's what people come here to hear.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the guy who actually filmed it, he tragically died of lymphoma. Like,
when do people not tragically
years.
Die?
He thankfully died of lymphoma about 5 years after the film was taken, but he maintained till his dying day that it was real, as has Robert Bob Gimlin, who
mm-hmm,
was
Bob,
the only one with him. Yes. He is actually still alive. He's stayed pretty silent about the whole thing until, like, 2012, and now he's doing a whole bunch of tours and
he goes to cons and shit,
press and whatnot,
interviews.
I don't know why he decided to break his silence, so to speak.
Cha-ching.
But I know for a long time he didn't, because he was cheated out of his cut of the publicity from the original film.
I thought you were gonna say cheated on, like, by Bigfoot.
His wife slept with Patty, and
fuck,
it just cut him to the core.
That's hot. Where's that movie?
Where's that? Yeah, that's the one
like
I
like sequel to Harry and the Hendersons. Lesbian Bigfoot cheating
lesbian
scandal.
Bigfoot cheating scandal.
And the Hendersons.
TMZ exclusive.
TM.
It's a long time, 1967 to 2012, to stay sort of under the radar. He did a couple of interviews. I think three interviews in that what is that, 50 years?
That's a Don't lot. Ask 40 me to years. Do math on the air.
Sorry. Me neither. Anyway, but he does maintain that, you know, it was true, and he has a very high-quality website that you can go check out.
Does it have rotating JPEGs?
And... No. It's actually extremely high quality.
Shit.
Like, he's got this 4K 60 frame per second background video. Like,
that sounds impressive.
Background of the website. That's why I'm Bob.
And that's why I'm Bigfoot. Also, my big feet.
It's just the biggest.
My big hairy
the
feet.
The biggest feet. Up to 24 inches long and up to 8 inches wide.
Just like my dong. I'm sorry. I told you I wouldn't talk about my dong on the
podcast. Well, that's going to do it for us episode of Bigfoot and Bob.
Fine.
But get at us next week.
Get at us. That's our tagline.
Get at us, America.
Hey, America. Get at us.
Hey, world, get at us.
Hey, conspiracy theorists, get away from us. No, wait, get at us. You're our demographic. Wait, did we make it clear that everything we're saying about, like, Bigfoot and monsters and shits is big old air quotes?
Absolutely true, yeah. Oh, yeah, 100% true. Completely
the
verifiable
truth
fact.
The truth is in here.
Oh my God, that's actually really good.
You're welcome. Oh, and by the way, you should tell them about our social media.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So you can find us in Apple Podcasts, Bigfoot and Bob, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We should be in your feed on there. And if you like the show and want to give us a 5-star rating, that is awesome.
That'd be super awesome.
If you didn't like us...
Don't tell us about it.
Well, no, you should whisper your rating into a plastic bag and seal it and throw it away with the rest of the garbage. You can also find us on you can also find us on Twitter at Bigfoot and Bob. We may have more social media in the future, but that's what we're sticking to right now. We are going to try and do weekly updates,
so you should be hearing from us every week, which is super great.
We'll be posting updates to the Twitter on the ongoing production schedule.
And by the way, it's Year of the Dog now, which is also the year I was born in, and that means it's Year of the Werewolf, bitches. So next episode is going to be all about werewolves, 24/7. Get ready.
Ow!
Ow!
Bigfoot and Bob, the truth is in here.
And then I point to my dog.
No, don't.
Okay, sorry. I've been Layla.
I've been Ryan.
The truth is in here. No, we don't say it together.
Oh, sorry.
The truth is in here.